Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about stress without distress. And to lead us in that discussion is Patty Hudson. Patty is a fellow seminar presenter. Patty, and what do you do outside of the seminar world?
I work as a life coach. Do I need to?
You're fine.
I work as a life coach.
And what does a life coach do?
A life coach helps people to see situations that cause them stress from a different perspective so that they can move forward. Helps people when they're stuck, basically. Life coach helps people to get to goal.
Okay, let's go back to the stress thing, because until last night when I was prepping for this morning, when I hear stress, it got a bad sound to me. It somebody stressed out. And that was not the case from what I read. We're built with a natural stress factor that is actually good for us to protect us in case of some type of perceived or real harm. Is that right?
Yes, it is. But it's also, stress is also the mother of creation, because anything that you do, anything that you want to create, is going to bring with it a measure of stress. So the ideal situation with stress is it's inevitable for every one of us. So instead of trying to avoid it, instead of trying to control it, if you embrace it from a different perspective, in other words, if you change your reaction to the stressor, and you change what you're thinking about the stressor, that's what's going to help you to get from the perception of distress into eustress, which is good stress.
Okay. And our listeners are probably in three groups, if you will. Probably the fewest and hopefully the growingest would be the new feds. And then we got the mid-career feds and pre-retirement, as well as retired feds. So at each one of those levels, I am sure there's stress. Take the new feds, it's I have to find a job, and then I have to find a job I like. But what if I found a job because I had a job offer and I didn't have one from anywhere else, and I took it, but I don't like my job? Let's go there first.
Okay.
And my stress is, I really like being employed, but I don't like what I'm doing.
So then you have to have a plan, okay? So you have to have a plan. What am I going to do with this? I have a job. It depends on who depends on you, okay? Do you need a paycheck for yourself? Do you need a paycheck for others? What is the situation? So you assess the situation. The logical thing would be to stay in the job until, that would be the path of logic, until you found another position. What often happens is we don't look for the opportunities in different situations. We get comfortable there. So if you're going to stay in that position, then you got to realize that that's your choice to stay in that position. If you really, really hate your job, you're going to be motivated to change your circumstances.
And within the federal sector, I think Mike Causey said many years ago, there isn't a job available that isn't available within the federal sector. So if we could, I know transferring out is easier said than done, but that would be the case. Now, you bring me back a number of years ago when I graduated from college, there were no jobs. It was even worse than it is today. And somebody said, would you like to do tax work? Preparing tax returns. And I said, I don't know anything about tax returns. And I went in and I didn't know anything, but they taught me. And, you know, I got my head handed to me more than a few times. And next thing I know, this isn't too bad. Now, why wasn't it too bad? I like to talk to people, but I could understand something nobody likes to understand, income taxes, and try to make sense of it and guide them. So initially where it was like, okay, I'll take it. Boy, I don't like it. Then I got to really like it. So did I turn some kind of stress button in my head that I didn't know that I turned to make good out of what I thought was perceived to be boring and bad?
From my perspective, what happened is you got a hit. Okay, I call that a hit. An opportunity was presented to you, and you weren't really sure. Of course, what were you, 21? I mean, what could you be sure of at 21? So you weren't really sure where you wanted to go or what kind of a job you wanted, but you took that job. And that's what I say to young people all the time. Taking a job is putting one step in front of the other. And when you put one step down, the other foot is going to follow. Otherwise, you're going to be imbalanced. So the other foot is going to follow. That's kind of what you did. You paid attention to that, and you found that you really liked it. And you found that, wow, this is a niche. And I think that's kind of, I think that opportunity is open to each and every one of us. I think it is. I think that you will, if you pay attention to yourself, something inside you said, you need to take this job. Obviously, not only your heart, your head, and everything else, because you needed to make a living.
Okay, now this isn't going to be a story of my life, but one other thing that the listeners might like. In high school, I would drop a course if I had to do public speaking. In college, I got a D in public speaking. I was scared to death, and I worked for this domineering boss who was actually a pussycat after 5 o'clock, but workday he wasn't. And he took me down to speak to some new people. I didn't sleep for 3 weeks. Talk about stress. And I was to do X, Y, and Z. And I did X, Y, and Z. And he goes, yeah, you're doing good. And he walked out of the room. Then he took me on the road in front of 60 accountants in Florida. Did the same thing. Walked out of the room for a day. And then I said, this isn't so bad. And so I would never have done it had it not been for him. And then it's kind of fun talking to people. And mm-hmm. It's kind of fun telling them things that, you know, can be useful in their business and or their personal life. Anyway, that's enough of me. But that was an awful lot of stress. That was sleepless nights and heart pounding.
See, that's what I was talking about. But there's a measure of fear that comes with each accomplishment. Because when you first start something, how do you know? How do you know? You may have been more introverted in high school. Your perception was that you were, and how other people oriented to you, maybe it validated that. I don't know, because I don't know your history. But I do know when you're faced with a fear, you have a choice about how you're going to navigate with that fear, so to speak. Are you going to look at it and say, okay, I'm going to run from this. I can't do this. Or are you going to say, I'm going to face this and see what happens, what it brings me? And I think that's what you did.
I did. And to this day, I like it. Now, Patty, if somebody wants to call and talk to you, they should. We're at 202-465-3080. We're talking stress. We're talking life coach. All righty. Now, let's go back to the newbies again. They start to work. And I'm certainly not a newbie, but a lot of them feel maybe more entitlement than what they're going to get initially until they earn it. How do they cope then with, the real world's a little bit different than it was prior to me leaving the school environment or whatever environment?
Yeah, that's an interesting, interesting.
How do they
get over
that?
It's an interesting question. Really, really what happens is, the answer to that is, how do they cope with it? They don't until circumstances are presented to them that say, okay, wait a minute, I have to cope with this. Wait a minute. What happens is, life lesson. And that's what happened. They have to have a little bit more time on the planet, and eventually they'll figure it out. If they have that entitlement stance, they're probably not going to last long in the job.
How do they get the message if they don't get the message? I mean, and they don't get it. Now, I'm entitled to this, and this one won't give it to me, so I'll go somewhere else. I guess if they go somewhere else a number of times, they finally get the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or if they get fired a number of times, You get the message. What I say to people is, pay attention. You have to pay attention to the way you're feeling, and you also have to pay attention to other people and their reaction to you. Okay, because you got to get to a place where you understand yourself and you understand the circumstances. A lesson is going to be presented. How you deal with that lesson is going to depend on you.
I know I can't out-talk you, and I don't think I can out-think you, but let me do a reversal now. Let's say the supervisor, who is not of that generation, not two generations, but maybe one generation ahead, is stressed at the fact that they've got this person that feels like they perceive them that the world owes them a living, but they can't, and they can't get their full potential out. They realize there is potential in there. How do they get to that person's level without trying to pretend that they are of that era?
Well, see, that's the problem. When you let's take the generations. Let's take baby boomers, because we're now, I hate saying this, but we're now the senior generation. And take a look at Gen Xers and millennials, and that's what is in the workforce today.
What's an Xer and what's a millennial?
Okay, Gen Xers 30 something, just to make it simple.
Okay.
And a millennial is 20 something.
Okay.
So let's keep it there. It's a little, there's actual times, but we're going to keep it there. So from that perspective, what I tell people is you got to find the common denominator. As a baby boomer, you have to be willing to understand the generation of Gen X without trying to be in their generation, without adopting their lingo or let's take it from a different way, a resentment, without developing a resentment. You have to, I like this, you have to look, listen, and feel. Okay, that's the same thing in CPR revival. I like threes, and I like telling people you have to look, listen, and feel. In most situations, when you're at a crisis or someone else is in a crisis, they want you to focus on the things at the side of your head instead of the thing in the middle of your face. Okay, so they're more interested in, am I being heard? And that's really what I think the common denominator is. Okay. You need to be heard. And then you have to find a way to communicate with them on a level that they understand. Is it difficult? It might be. If you approach it from the perspective that I'm not of your generation, I wasn't born of your time. The circumstances when you were born were completely different than the circumstances when I was born. So what I'm going to do is listen to you, because if I listen to you, I'm going to hear the influence from your generation. And that's going to help me to be more objective. And then I think the answer is going to be easier to see. You never can see a solution to any problem when you focus on the problem.
Okay, let's move on up the ladder. We're moving kind of fast here, but now we're mid-career. We got the message and we're working, but now maybe the hierarchy shift, and I'm dealing with a boomer. And the boomers got their ways to look at things, and now this person is maybe seeing more of the light than what they did before, but they're not moving as fast up the line, or they don't get along with the person. Let's say they're extremely bright and they really shouldn't be where they are, but they maybe have a little animosity towards this person in the way because they're not so bright, but they're in the way. How do they work around that, and how does the, on both sides, let's start with the person in the middle first rather than the boomer. How do they work around that? They maybe really are qualified, but there's a mindset above them that won't change.
Well, you just said the word,
yeah.
Mindset. Okay.
How do you change
the mindset of both generations? First of all, you have to have a willingness. Okay. So if either party is definitely unwilling, you're not going to get anywhere. There are solutions. I mean, life coaches work all over. They're executive coaches today, and that's exactly what they do. They go into a situation and they try to take away the barriers, okay? They try to take away the fact that traditionalists, the older generation, the baby boomers, the Gen Xers, the millennials, and get to the common denominator, okay? We're all people in the workforce. That's the common denominator. So now we have to build from there, and they have to take away the element of fear from the older employee and the mid worker, what you're talking about, the mid career in employee. need to listen. That's back to what I was saying before. You have to listen, and you have to respect that, okay, your generation's different than mine. So in a situation like that, I do believe that there's some education out there people need to take advantage of. I just read a fabulous book. It's called Positive Intelligence by a man named Shamin and Shirzad Shamin. And he talks about that. He's got impressive degrees. In fact, when I first read the book, I thought, oh my, didn't anybody tell him he didn't need any more education? But he talks about how surprised he was when he was placed in a situation where he was hit in the face with the way someone else viewed him. So I think you have to get to that place. I think you have to understand the way you're being perceived by that mid-career employee and the way you perceive that mid-career employee. And I think there has to be a meeting of the minds, if you will, about that before you can move forward.
Okay, now we got stressed, though, that maybe is developing some system, outward appearances. I left that go at the beginning because hopefully it's not there then. But stress warning signs. I'm looking off of this thing I read last night, the cognitive symptoms, memory loss, poor judgment, seeing only the negative. Boy, I've been around, and I'm sure you more than a few people like that, constant worrying, and then emotional symptoms, moodiness, irritability, feeling overwhelmed. Now we're mid-career, and that's starting to take hold. How do I work myself out of that? I mean, we're just talking about the physical.
There's physical things you can do. There's psychological things you can do. Let's talk about the psychological things you can do. With stress on the whole, there's I love threes, okay? And there are three things you can do with stressors. You can change it, you can remove yourself from it, or you can accept it. And unfortunately today, because of our lifestyles, because of the way it is, most times we have to, okay, I'm in a stressful situation. Now, what am I going to do with it? The most important step, the very first step from my perspective, is to validate that you're there, okay? Because if you get into the habit of ignoring it, I like to say that a habit is a kind of hell that we condemn ourselves to prevent change. If you get into the habit of ignoring it, okay, eventually it's going to come out on your body. You're going to have a reaction to it. That's what I call an energy withdrawal. Okay. Stress is an energy withdrawal. Now, what are you going to do with that when you have that withdrawal? Well, you have to balance it out with an energy deposit. Okay. Because if you think of health from an energy perspective, all right, and really that's exactly what it is. So the good feelings, the accomplishments, creativity, love, anything that really makes you feel good is an energy deposit. An energy withdrawal, all those yucky emotions that you were talking about, okay? The resentment, the bitterness, the frustration, the anger, those take energy from your body. So the first thing that you have to do is validate that I'm feeling this, because if you don't and you stuff it down in your body, eventually circumstances are going to be created that force you to deal with exactly what you're feeling. And that's where we run into problems. When people say, what is stress overload? Well, let's simplify it, which, you know, there's nothing simple, but let's simplify it. Stress overload is basically, you got more energy going out than you got coming in. And when that happens, you set your body up for an imbalance. And what usually follows that is some sort of distress. And it can be disease. It can be physical, manifested physically.
Wow. Okay, then the symptoms. I mean, we might not know. We know we're busy. We know it's stressful, busy, but then the symptoms come. the symptoms, the irritability. Sometimes people don't recognize that, me being one of them, although I don't think I'm real irritable, or moodiness, or other, you know, aches and pains, or nausea and the like. So how do you lay out a plan? Again, we're mid-career types now. How do I lay out a plan to say, I can't do this for the next 15, 20 years? Do I have to take one day off every other week and have a three-day weekend and have nothing to do? Do I work harder? And then I think that just accelerates the problem.
What do you do?
Yeah, what do you do?
Okay. First of all, I would like to teach everyone to pay attention at all times to the way they feel. That's been my focus. Pay attention to the way you feel, because the way you feel is important. It's feelings are a guidance system. I believe that everybody has a built-in emotional guidance system. And if you start to pay attention to the way you feel, that's the first step. Now, if you get to the place where you have nausea or irritability or moodiness, or that's, you haven't paid attention to the way you felt in the beginning. You've kind of repressed those feelings. I can't do this. I've got to go on. So you're not really validating the way you feel in the beginning. And then you get to a place where pain is a great motivator. Okay. And that's what's been true for a very long time. So now what do you do? Well, the question that I ask people is, what do you want? This is a simple question. What do you want? What outcome do you want? Okay. So now you lay that out. That's the beginning of the plan. You lay out, what do I want? And I have to focus on what I want. Okay. I don't know if you're going to get it, but I can tell you this. If you don't focus on it, for sure you're not going to get it.
Okay. And then we flip that around to the supervisor at that point, working with the person that just came up. How do they help? They can't help the person with, you need to read this book, or you need to maybe go to this seminar or this talk on this, if you find that and you find the person is receptive to it. But some people put a shield up and they don't want to hear it. They know they got the problem, but not them. How do you penetrate the shield?
That's a very interesting thing. It's a challenge. Okay. And the bottom line is, you can't change anybody. So you really can't. All you can do is present information and pay attention, but you can't change anything. I think training is available. I do think that. And I think the supervisor, the wise supervisor, recognizes that each individual needs a measure of training and provides that. That's what NITP seminars are all about, a measure of training, okay? So that helps people to understand. But once again, if those who don't have ears to hear are not going to hear, they're not going to hear. So when you're in a situation like that, then you have to focus on your solution to the problem. I tell people that there's no security in the universe. There's only opportunity. So what I try to get to is, all right, I told you I love threes. So what I try to get to is, okay, so I'm in this situation and I'm in this really, really stressful situation. First thing I'm going to do is try to find three positive things about this stressful situation, because I've got to get to a different mindset. I'm never going to be able to see the solution when I'm in this mindset. You know, especially if the mindset is rooted in these kind of awful negative feelings and fear, okay? And I tell people all the time, the decisions that you make in fear are going to be very different than the decisions that you make in faith.
Wow. Now, talk about threes. In the proverbial green room before the show, you had a great saying. I'm sure you're going to remember this. When you point your finger at somebody, you got three fingers pointing back at you.
Yeah. I really do like to listen to people, and I really do like to observe. So, and a lot of us will be complaining, okay, and about a friend, about a coworker, about a boss, whatever, okay? And I always say, when you point that finger, make sure that three fingers aren't coming back at you. Okay. Is this an objective assessment, or is this person in your life to teach you something about yourself that maybe you never would have known? I can't answer those questions. You have to answer them for yourself. But what I tell people is pay attention to everything that animates you. Pay attention to everything that causes a visceral reaction on your body. Okay. Because there's information in that for you. I also tell people, and you know, none of this is new. There certainly are many other people who were pioneers with this, and many people who are much more intelligent than me that have tried to educate people about this. But here's the deal. Person that bothers you the most, the person that pushes your buttons over and over and over, that's your greatest teacher. Now, your job is to find out, what are they trying to teach me?
That was exactly my first 10 years on the job. Just got kicked every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And until about 6 years into it. Then after that, the last 4 years, yeah. Going back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was time to leave the nest. And never dawned on me. Of course, then I'm not the fastest in the world. But
well, no,
really
You know what? I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think what it has to do with is at that time, and you just don't have enough time on the planet to figure it out. Okay, if there are different levels of competency, and there's a whole theory on that, and what your boss was trying to do was to push you up the ladder of competency until you reach the top rung, which is unconscious competency. In other words, it's that place where, how did you figure this out? And why do you do this? I don't know. And you know, it's because you've lived long enough and you have the experience and you've paid attention and now you're at that level. And the problem is with seasoned employees versus mid-career or brand new employees. Let's say that brand new employees are at the bottom, unconscious incompetence, and you ask them, why did you do that? I don't know. I say that teenagers live there, okay? Mm-hmm. Whenever you ask a teenager, what possessed you? I don't know. Okay, so, you know, you can use that to kind of understand, all right, I have to break down concepts. And in order to do that, I really have to understand how to break down 10 years worth of learning so that I can help this employee. And what's the best approach? That's hard work. The good supervisor figures it out. You had a gentleman who mentored you in exactly the right way for you, but you also had to pay attention. Okay, because that opportunity would have been missed if you were mired in feelings that wouldn't allow you to move forward.
It was also, I hate to keep telling these war stories, but I'll not forget this. I was 5 or 6 years into the job. It's the 70s. I'm having a good time. I worked hard during the day, and we did really good work, but at night, you know, you did whatever. And 5, 6 years into it, he said, when are you going to get your CPA? I could have cared less. And I go, I don't know. He said, pass it. In other words, pass it or you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that. He didn't have to say that. And I passed it. But along the way, again, there was the older person telling the young idiot what to do, and don't bump into the walls too hard. But you couldn't brush up against them. Just don't wreck. All righty, so now we're going to move to pre-retirement. Again, both sides of the fence. We got the boss and somebody that's just migrated from mid-career and has got a step increase or a few grade increases and the like. Now, the person that's just moved into the new position, not the older one, has probably got even more stress. They got maybe kids, maybe not. Maybe not a stress. Maybe having the kids is a stress. How are we going to pay for school if they go to school? If they don't go to school, you know, how do I guide them in the, you know, because kids don't want to, I guess, hear anything from the parents at a certain age. And so then they got the job stress because they got to keep up the their efficiency level and their knowledge level to go on to take over the boss's job. Now, it seems to me that they're getting squeezed from all kinds of different ways. And then maybe the irritability comes in. Maybe some of the other factors come in. And I should ask you this question. If you know you're under stress and you know you're under stress, if you walked into the office each day and you just punched a drywall, not hard, just punched it, eventually you're going to break the drywall after a number of years. And I liken that to blood vessels or a heart attack or something. You don't know. It's silent.
Good metaphor.
And,
and
then, boom, one day it hits you. Mm-hmm. So how does somebody that isn't aware of that, but they know they're under the pressure mill, how do they call you up and say, help?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's get back to the situation that you just presented. And the situation that you presented is someone who has a work life and a home life, okay? And both those situations cause stress. So the first thing you have to do is take a look at, how can I create work-life balance? How can I create that? So that's your first responsibility, because without work-life balance, you're setting up a situation for the future that you're not going to like. All right. So that's the first thing. And I got to say this. I think Gen Xers are better at it than baby boomers were. I really do. And I think millennials are even better at it. So that's one of the positive things that I think comes from their generation. And, you know, every generation is affected by the generation in front of it. All right. The other part of that, how do you help somebody like that? I talk to people all the time about doctors. What kind of a doctor do you have? Because the health care has changed, and we're now looking at the biomedical model and questioning it. And we're getting more into the body, mind, spirit approach, where, I mean, I have a fabulous doctor. And at one point, I had what I thought was a real symptom. And I was under tremendous stress due to change. And the extent to which your life is affected by change is connected to the level of stress that you'll feel. And the second connection is the control that you have over it. Those are the two greatest stressors: change and loss of control. So my doctor pushed away from her seat and she goes, well, you have no symptoms. You know, you have symptoms, but there's no disease there, Patty, you know. So so what's going on with you? Okay. And I would say that the doctor who asked that question is wise, and a doctor that you should hang on to. I think the supervisor that asked that question is wise. So that's what I think that's the scenario that I would give there. As far as the individual, you have to figure out, do I have work-life balance? Do I have that? And what test is there for it? There's physical things you can do, okay? There's choices you can make. It's a known fact that for each individual to navigate more effectively with stress, you need to do a few things. One of them is you need to have 20 minutes of downtime a day. And downtime isn't driving to and from work.
Definitely
especially
not.
Around here. Downtime is doing something that is exactly what you want to do. Something that brings energy to your body. Something that doesn't create any measure of stress. I tell people, create a little area in your house and, you know, and tell everybody, I'm in downtime. And, you know, is that hard to do? Well, if you think it is, it is. Argue for your limitations. They're yours. So, you know, that's the way it is. The second thing is pay attention to the amount of sleep you get. If you get less than 7 hours of sleep, your reaction time is affected. Your decision-making process is affected. Your business acumen is affected. Your health is affected. Your weight is affected. Negatively, everything is negatively affected. So your first goal is, what do you want to create that's going, what situation is going to help you with this stressful situation, something that you can do. And the 20 minutes of downtime, the 7 hours of sleep, those are things that you can focus on. Another thing I tell people is you have to be able to transition from your role as employee, employer, into your role as husband, father, wife, mother. You have to have some time to be able to do that, to transition. So I tell people, when you walk into your house, the area that you walk into should be orderly. I don't care if the rest of your house is a rolling redemption center, but the area that you walk into needs to be orderly. And there should be a basket of some kind that you can put the mail in. Because if you're stressed over bills, what are you looking at when you walk into the house? Now, how are you going to deal with, hi, honey, how was your day? What do you mean, how was my day? You know, I mean, you're not going to deal real well. All right. You have to be able to transition in a peaceful manner. You have to get the most peace out of it that you can. So there's another area that you can work on. You know, I mean, we could get into all physical things that you can do. None of them will help you as much as taking a look at your mindset, taking a look at your thoughts.
Okay, Coach. Coach Patty or Coach Patty Hudson or Coach Hudson?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
All hey, right. You, Coach.
Okay. How do we get in touch with you? Not metaphysically, but...
Well, if somebody wanted to get in touch with me, they could use my email. That would be the best thing to do.
And okay. That is?
PATI1T. I do not spell my name with one T. Yahoo would not let me put it in any other way. So it's PATISAYS, Patty Says, 2711 at yahoo.com. PATISAYS, 2711 at yahoo.com. And I am available. I will answer whatever questions you have for me. I will do my very best to guide you in whatever way I can. And you just got to give me a little time to answer your email and make sure you weren't spammed.
Okay. So now let's move on up the ladder. The boss, if you will, supervisor, is now retiring. And we're going to decouple, you know, whoever's going to take the place is going to take the place. Of course, nobody can take this person's place, but and they're kind of out there on the ledge and say, do I jump into retirement or do I stay? You know, some people can't wait till they retire, and that's fine. They have the mindset for that. But the other one, that's they don't have a life outside of work. Work is their passion. There is no sport. There is no downtime. How does that person get off the train? I mean, maybe they ride the train for the rest of their life.
They could.
In the back of their head, they're saying there's got to be something more to life than this.
Okay. That's an interesting scenario. And, you know, there's many different groups of people that have difficulty with retirement. Major group is the one that's job identified. Okay. And the problem with any change, you really do not. I love those books. Like the first one that comes to mind is What to Expect When You're Expecting. Well, you can read that book, but you know what? Until you're expecting, you don't know what to expect. And until you experience it, guess what? All right. So the deal is that you have to be able to experience retirement. The approach that you take to that is what's important. The approach with the mind, what you put in your mind is more important than what you put in your mouth. Okay. What you put in your mind is going to keep you healthier, even if you eat bad stuff. Okay. If you put healthy thoughts in your mind, that's going to be a much better approach to wellness than worrying about, oh my God, that food has 15 grams of fat. All right. I worry much more about the mindset than I do the mouth. Okay. The second part of that that's interesting is generations after us have an advantage. And I'm getting back to work-life balance. All right. The case that you just gave me about the guy whose job was his life, no work-life balance, none. Okay. And the realization and the truth that all good things come to an end, you know, it's the way it is. I know many people who don't retire. That's a choice. But I tell people, eventually life's going to retire you. I promise. It will. I promise. Every one of us is going to assume room temperature at some point.
I like that. Okay, so, Andrew, we can have two corned beefs next year in New York. Andrew's the engineer, of course.
Uh-huh. Anyway, two corned beefs. Two corned beefs
and whatever else
days.
He
yeah,
was eating.
I'm
he introduced worried. Me to some really neat food. Anyway, we de-stressed for a while. All right. How to manage stress. I think we talked about that. Schedule. How do you break the workaholic that really wants to slow down, but for whatever reason, no is not in their vocabulary. It's yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Like, as I said, you know, circumstances are going to be presented to that person and it's going to put the brakes on. The circumstances will put the brakes on, I promise you. But the person that you're talking about that is the workaholic, they have to want to change. Okay. They have to be willing to change. That's number one. Number two, they have to be aware that they are a workaholic. And here's the deal. We're all self-deluded. So that's why I say that taking a look at your life from the perspective of paying attention to the way you're feeling at all times, every one of us, bar none, have this built-in emotional guidance system that helps us to unravel all the mysteries about ourselves. That's the conduit to getting into that self that's not known to self and not known to others. That, if you will, that's Jahari's window. It's the four-pane self. And
not three?
Pardon me?
Not three panes?
No, it's four.
Okay.
It's the self that's known to self and known to others, and that's the self that we present and that we're comfortable with. There's the self not known to self but known to others. There's the self not known to others but known to self. And the rich one, the self not known to self and not known to others, if you will, that's your, what's trending now, authentic self. And in that self are all your gifts and talents. The perception of the workaholic, the guy that's stuck with job identity, is this is who I am. I'm not, I don't have anything else, or I'm not anything else, or I'm too old to change. And once again, I'm going back to argue for your limitations. They're yours. Okay. What I like to do is to take a circle and to really just do a little exercise where you're filling out that circle based on a 24-hour day and take 7 hours out for sleep, because that's your first goal to de-stressing, and then break up the pieces of the pie and see who you spend time with. See exactly what you do, and does that line up with your goals? Put your values down, put your goals down. In order for you to reach those goals, they have to be represented in that day. What's most valuable to you? Okay. I had one lady say, I wrote down that my husband's most valuable to me, and I realize I haven't talked to him in 3 days. And that's an example of what I'm talking about. Okay. We get on this kind of wheel, you know, like the gerbil's wheel. And we just go, and we just go, and we just go, and we just go, and we don't pay attention. And we don't ask the question. So the first question when you're in that situation is, what got me here, and what can I do to change it? You ask that question, you're on your way.
Okay. Now, not the finality, but the last leg of this, I do retire. And I'm going to take, if you don't mind, two approaches. I do retire, and I can't believe I'm as busy as I am, or why did I retire? Okay, let's do the worst one first. Why did I retire? Gee, I had a social network. I have a purpose to get up every morning, sure, but now I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to read the paper, and after a while, maybe I do whatever, but I get tired of doing whatever, and I really want to go back to work.
So what I would say to that person is, what do you want? Do you want to go back to work? Because that's a choice. You may not find it's going to be, you're going to have as many choices as you did when you were 30, okay, or 40, or maybe even 50, okay? But it's a choice. If that's what you're going to focus on, you're going to find a job if you want to go back to work. Or do you want to enjoy the rest of your life? And what's my approach to do that? Well, the first thing, I'm going to go right back to what I said before. You ask the question, what do I want? You have to know what you want. If you don't know what you want, you're on that fence, and circumstances are going to make that decision for you. Because if you don't want to stay retired because you haven't really figured out what it is you want, then eventually circumstances choose for you. You're in an unhealthy state, an unhealthy mindset if you're not happy. To me, it's complicated and simple. To me, your job, your primary job, I don't care whether what your other jobs are, what your other identities are, what your role is, you have to have a base of joy. And if you don't have that in your life, sooner or later, you're going to run into circumstances that are going to be difficult. And so if you always work at creating that base, you're going to be okay. We know that the person that's going to have the easiest time in retirement is the person that brings a positive attitude to the process. I'm looking at this as the third stage of my life. And this is so exciting. And I also tell people, listen to me. Think of your life. A wise man once told me this. Think of your life as a tapestry. Okay. And at the end of your life, you look at the front of that tapestry and it paints a picture. And I hope a beautiful picture. And you turn around and you look at the back of that tapestry and it's all mishmash. And it's necessary to create the mishmash to get to the beautiful picture. And that's just the way it is.
Wow. Okay, now what if I recognize that I am going to retire, but I really haven't done any prep work? What do I test before I retire? In other words, do I want to move to another state? Do I want to become a mentor to somebody? Do I want to teach at a night school, day school? The overused expression, play golf all day. Nah. So do I test out different things rather than just jump?
Yeah. Do one. I tell people, do one thing. Okay. Make one approach. Take one approach. Listen, there's a really fun website. It's called findyourspot.com for retirees, people out there who are thinking about retiring and relocating. And what it does is it asks lots and lots of questions, in excess of 60 questions, and then it spits back at you three areas in the country that jives with your energy.
What's the name of that website?
Findyourspot.com. Fun thing. Even if you're not going to move, the information that you receive is also an awareness. Oh my gosh, I never would have thought that I would have wanted to live there. And then you take a look at what's available in that particular state and you're like, wow, you know? So, and maybe it'll even be a hit for you. Maybe it'll even be those hits that I talk about where you cannot ignore them. Oh, you can, but if you do, you're going to miss a lot of the richness that life has to offer. Let me just say one more thing about people that are going to retire. Everyone orients to us in a certain way, especially our family. They have a tendency to put us in a box. Your life is outside the box when you retire. Your life is outside that box. What you do is what you choose to do, and it can be so exciting. If you look at the third age as, oh, wow, I don't know what my gifts and talents are, but I'm going to figure out. I'm going to figure it out. They're much more than those that I used on the job.
Wow. Now, Patty, as we glide through here, I mean, we started at the beginning when somebody starts their work career, and now we're at the end. If we need any refreshment of what we just did for the last 56 minutes, how do we get in touch with you?
Once again, it's it's not a website. I will have a website soon, but my email is PATISAYS, Patty Says 2711 @yahoo.com.
Okay, now after you present seminars and you've been kind enough to work together with NITP, what kind of calls do you get or questions after class? Certainly you can't tell me exactly.
Yeah, but I can tell you.
Profile?
I can tell you. I offer everybody my email address. I tell them that I have what I call the junk to send to them. And that's the junk is kind of an innocuous way of getting in touch with me. After class, people talk to me about specific things that are bothering them.
Is there a particular
one greater than another? There's a biggie
question?
One. There's a biggie one. For men, it always has to do with the relationship with their wife. Always.
Really?
Always. Always. Has to do with the relationship with their wife, especially the generation that's going to retire.
Does the wife ever call you?
The wife, it's a different approach. It's a completely different thing. With the baby boomer generation, women who have achieved that work-life balance, and we've had a little bit easier time of it, aren't quite as threatened with retirement.
Wow, that's very interesting. I wouldn't think, you know, guys, I being one of them, we don't like to show our emotions.
Oh, yeah. There's a good book about that. It's called I Don't Want to Talk About It by Terrence Real. Read it.
In your Italian vernacular. Read
yeah.
It. I like that. Okay. Well, we're about ready to take the glide path down. And it's been great having you here. And I like the way we walk through you know, the young took the old position, and there are people like you, but of course none like you, that would have that life raft. So I think it's time to call it a morning, and we're here next week. And thanks for listening, you all, and have a good week, and we'll see you. What's next week? July or June 18th? Is that right, Andrew? Andrew says yes. All righty. See you then. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.